I've been making money for 2 decades, and the argument of whether passive income is real or possible has never stopped. There's quite frankly a load of bullshit out there about if passive income is real. Both that it's a scam, but both that it's too easy. Possibly for the first time ever, I'm going to give the most balanced view on whether passive income is real. And I would know because I have 16 different income streams from 14 different companies. I became a millionaire by age 31, a decamillionaire by age 35, which was a long time ago. I have 340 property real estate units, and I've seen the schemes and the scams and the stuff that works for real. And in this new format for our money episode, I have a special guest interviewer who pokes, prods, and grills the pants off me. Warning, if you get triggered easily about money, this is going to wind you up. Before I get into this, make sure you leave a comment on whether you believe passive income is real. Have you been scammed or have you made passive income? Let me know.
Is passive income real?
Passive income is mostly a scam from people selling get-rich-quick bullshit. But if you build the right business model and you start with the end in mind, passive income is real. When you start from scratch, there is no such thing as passive income. It is all a lie, because you can't plant a seed and the next day get the tree without the roots growing down deep. So I have 340 rental units. They pay me a 7-figure rental income. For me, that is 99.9% recurring percent passive. But it was very active for the first few years to build the portfolio of 340 units. I have 1,350 tenants in my property management company. For me, that is 99.99% recurring passive. But it took us 7 years to build dozens of properties and then hundreds enough to have a big enough property management company and staff and partners who ran the operations. Now, a good example of this is a band called Slade, who wrote a Christmas number one in the early 1970s, and it's called It's Christmas, and you're probably singing it in your head right now. Now, ever since they wrote that Christmas number one, every Christmas that makes them 500 grand minimum a year, and they are not still writing that song. They are not even playing that song. Same with Mariah Carey. She earns a massive royalty every Christmas. But how many gigs did Slade play in dingy, dark, dirty local pubs and gigs before they wrote that 1970 whatever Christmas number one? They might have been doing it 10 or 15 years. If you build a membership site and you've got recurring income, you still have to put content in that membership site. People who say they make passive income out of crypto, well, it's actually capital, not income. And it's only profit while you're on a bull run before you lose. That being said, I have 14 income streams, and many of them are passive because you have to work hard enough not to have to work hard, and you have to set to forget. So anyone that's starting in business, beware. There are hundreds of schemes and scams of passive income. Why does it work? Because everyone wants it. The dream, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
The dream to do fuck all and earn a load of money. But that's not how the universe works. You're not going to get paid for nothing. You get paid for value. And now I earn a 7-figure rental income and an 8-figure sales income from my property portfolio and my training businesses respectively, because I've built valuable assets over nearly 2 decades.
So tactically, if you've got, so how many tenants?
1,350-ish. Depends how many we've evicted. Yeah, right. Or how many have left, yeah.
How do you make that 99.9% recurring passive? What's the actual steps to make a active income passive?
Okay, well, you have to make it active before you make it passive. Now, there are a couple of cheats. So if you have a massive lump of capital already, you can jump the active into the passive. So for example, if you've got £10 million, you can expect a 5 to 6% return on the S&P 500 or the FTSE 100. and what's 5 to 6% of £10 million, it's a decent enough amount of money to live off. Most people could live off $500,000 or $600,000, but most people don't start with 10 million. So the more capital you have, the more passive you can expect from an asset class, but the money is the value. If your time is the value, you need to build the asset. Or if you have an existing asset, you can create another asset with that in value. So for example, once you've got your own property portfolio that maybe a managing agent is managing, you can set up your own management company, and that's a spin-off asset. So I built a property of a, of a few dozen properties in my first 3 years personally with my business partner. And then with the knowledge we gained, we wrote a book. Now, writing a book is active income, but once it's on Amazon and Audible and you're selling it, it's then passive income. I've been earning on my book since 2008. That's a lot of years of earning passive income, but I actively had to write the book. So a trick, a tactic that most people don't know. People think, oh, well, the average millionaire has 7 income streams. I have 14 income streams. So they're going to start 7 different income streams. That's not how to do it. You get good at one thing and create active income, and then you set up a spin-off asset to create passive income. Now, I'll answer your question in a minute, but I need a context. So I started selling properties to other people first, and I cleared my 50 grand of debt, and I made nearly 100 grand in a year. Wasn't passive, it was very active, and I wasn't building assets, so I was exchanging time for money, which, this is another thing you see, Robert Kiyosaki, who's obviously, Robert Kiyosaki has been on my show. He's taught a lot of people about assets versus liabilities and, you know, not exchanging your time for money. But how do you start something without exchanging your time for money first, unless you have a £10 million, or as we say, TML, 10 million liquid, to start? So it's a big myth that you should stop exchanging time for money. What you should do is exchange time for money and build an asset while you're doing it. So if you're going to sell properties as a realtor or an agent, that's smart, because you can learn how to invest in your own real estate while selling real estate to other people. So let's say you have a good year or two and you earn a six figure, which is possible in estate agency or being a realtor. Make sure that you're building the knowledge to invest yourself as well. And once you've got good knowledge of selling properties to other people, you can spot the bargains and then you buy them yourself. And then maybe you raise finance from a wealthy investor that you sold some deals to. And now all of a sudden, you've exchanged your time for money for 1 or 2 years as a realtor. And now you've built the knowledge asset. And so now you can exchange your time for money with that knowledge asset into a physical asset. Now, when you start buying real estate, it's not passive income, it's active work. But as soon as you've bought it, negotiated it, exchange completed, vetted your tenant and put your first tenant in, and then your tenant's paying, then it becomes passive. But it becomes like 90% passive instead of 90% active, because the managing agent still needs managing and the tenant still needs managing. But then when you've got enough properties, you then set up your own management company. And so when you have a management company, and this answers your question, I just needed a context, I have a business partner who owns a third of my management company, and he runs that company, and he has a dozen staff who deal with all the inventories and the tenants in and the tenants out and managing 1,350 tenants. So I am only 0.01% active with communication to my partner. So if you're really smart, you can then pop off even more asset classes. So in 2006, I sold properties to other people and cleared my debt and made nearly six figures. In 2006 and seven, I bought real estate for myself with my business partner's money. In 2007 to 10, we were buying real estate for ourselves and selling packaged real estate deals to other people, but we owned the company. In 2008, we wrote our first book. When the crash happened in 2009, we wrote our second book. Then we launched our training business, Progressive Property, which is the biggest training business in the UK now. we do more than 20 million a year in sales. Sometimes it's nearer 25. And at each stage, I was able to set up a new asset. Now, I had to work hard to write the books, and now I all have to do is receive the money. I had to work hard to set up the training business, but as you know, now we have many trainers and partners. And then I've got membership sites and all sorts of other asset classes that have spun off of it. So that's how you do it.
Do you think equity is an important thing there? So it sounds like you're relying heavily or trusting other people heavily to run those things so you don't have to. So then your 0.1% is just back and forth communication, how things going. Do you think giving that person equity so that they're bought in, does that buy you back more time? Because if someone was, I would assume if somebody was just on a salary, they'd probably be less proactive, or perhaps they wouldn't care about how well it was going as much.
Yeah. So really there's two ways to automate passive income. It's a system or it's a human. So you either write software, system, process, manual. You know, they have these various models right now, software as a service, SaaS, it's known, SaaS. Or you could build an app or some tech, and you can have automation. Some automation through tech and software can remove the need for that many or any people. The other way to do it is have one really good person that manages everything for you. You might not have any software. That they may have chaos in their role. They may have 100 hours a week to do. But if I've got one person that's doing that for me, I've got passive income and they're doing all the active work. Now, as long as they get paid well and they enjoy their job, you're only one person away from having passive income. Everyone's looking for passive income in the stock market or in crypto or in software or in e-com. You can actually have any business making passive income if you get someone else to run the business. So I own one third of Progressive Lets, which has 1,350 tenants. And the one of our third shareholders runs the business. You know, he sits in that office there. And then he has his number two, who mostly runs the business for him. And then she has her staff who mostly run the operations for her. This is why a lot of small business owners struggle, because they think, well, if you want something done properly, you have to do it yourself, or you can't trust anyone to do the job as well as you. I've transcended that. And I mostly now have most of my businesses run by senior people. Now, the next question, which was your question, so remember, it's process or person. So a lot of people are looking for a business model that fits perfectly as passive income. The best way to do it might be to find a really good skilled person and then get them to perform jobs, tasks, functions, build companies and projects for you and that make millions of pounds, and you earn off their work. So the next thing is, do you give them equity? How do you find these people? How do you motivate these people? So if you have an inspiring vision and you're an energetic person and you're good at communicating how what you can do makes a difference and makes... And if you're good at communicating what you do makes a difference and makes money and changes lives, you will magnetically pull good people to you. Then to keep those good people, you need to make sure that their job is really clear, give them all the resources they need, then get out of their way and let them run your business for you, and then manage them in a way that they know their key performance metrics and give them a career path where every year or 3 years they could get some kind of promotion or some kind of increase in earnings. And the way I usually do it for a senior person is you start with your salary, then we'll talk in 6 to 18 months about adding a commission structure on top, because I want them to do their core role first. And so if they hit their metrics for their role, then we're gonna add a commission structure on top. And then if that commission structure goes well, we'll have a higher tier commission. And then if that goes well, they'll get a profit share. And then if that goes well, they'll get equity. Mm. And equity for me is always last, because I want them to earn in, unless I manage to get Tim Cook. You may want to edit that out, you may not. And unless I manage to get Tim Cook, who's not a cock, out of Apple. Now, if I could get Tim Cook out of Apple, I'm immediately giving him equity.
Yeah.
Because he's so good, I know I'm going to give that big offer, otherwise he's not going to take the job.
So Ben Francis, the founder of Gymshark, says from 0 to 10 million, you need to be in the business, micromanaging every decision is yours. And then beyond that, if you really want to scale, that's when you hire in, get people better than you, let go. Now, one of your many companies, like you said, Progressive Property, does over 20 million. Would you say those figures are about right? What point does, how much revenue does a company need to make before you think, okay, I can take a step back, let somebody run that, and I can live passively?
Yeah, it might be controversial to disagree with a young billionaire. The answer is no, that's not right. But it probably is for your startup. So if it's your first company that's a startup, trying to outsource and leverage and be passive from day one is quite frankly stupid and naive, because you don't plant a seed, like I said, and expect the tree the next day. So you have to work hard enough not to have to work hard. And graft and hustle and speed. You see, this is the thing of the modern era we're in. Speed is everything. You know how much I bang heads over speed, and you know how much I hate laboriousness and slowness and over debate and overthinking and procrastination and perfectionism and layers of management. You know how much I hate all that stuff. So in your first startup, I would probably mostly agree with Ben Francis that you've got to mostly micromanage most of the things, not all, because I don't check my code as code, and I bet you Ben Francis doesn't check his code as code either. So there has to be some things you let go of, even at the 0 to 10 million level. But you do have to be very involved. So with Ben, I'm sure he was involved in the logo of Gymshark. I'm sure he was involved of the design of all the clothes, but I bet he didn't make the clothes. I bet you he wasn't stitching it at 10 million. So I haven't seen what he said. I'm going paraphrasing from you, but I think he's made a generalization. But if you want to build your second company, your third company, and your 10th company, he's wrong. Because how can you build 10 companies on micromanaging everything? So I have 14 income streams. No, I have 16 income streams, actually, 14 companies. And my third company, and my fifth company, and my 10th company, I was not micromanaging from 0 to 10 million. I was getting a good senior team in, and I was more outsourcing from the start.
So here's a question. You mentioned something earlier, and I wanted to circle back to it. Do you class capital appreciation as passive income?
No, it's passive capital. So capital appreciation is theoretical growth on paper, which you'd materialize if you sold it, minus sales costs and taxes and debt. So people think they're a net worth millionaire or billionaire, but when you take off sales costs and probably 10 to 20% haircut, because anytime you sell anything, you've got to sell it higher than the retail price, unless it's in demand, and taxes can be so penal, you're left with a lot less. So capital is not income. Only income is income. You know, there's different types of money. Equity, capital, income and debt are all related to you making money. But debt is not yours, you've borrowed it, but it leverages you to buy an asset like property. You might not be able to buy £1 million property in the penthouse apartment in our city, but you might be able to put 200 down and get 800 off the bank. So you need debt to create equity on assets that you can't afford. So essentially debt is leverage. Equity is what's left after debt. So a lot of people have got a portfolio of a capital value, but they haven't got any capital in it. What's in it is equity after sales costs and taxes and debt. So this is why, you know, I had a bit of a ding-dong argument with Andrew Tate about his net worth. He was putting in his theoretical capital asset value of his company into his net worth. And whilst I know that's a way to measure it, that's not the way I measure net worth. The net worth is the realistic saleable value of all the assets minus the debt. Whereas he could have gone the dreamy best case scenario of the asset. on a EBITDA multiplier of 25, whereas in reality, he might get a 20% haircut on an EBITDA multiplier of 3. Because in lockdown, companies would have looked to buy us for 10 to 20 times EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, blah, blah, blah. Basically, net profit, almost, but not quite. Now we might get 3 to 5. So the timing of when you sell and value these assets. So equity is what's yours after debt, sales costs and taxes. Capital is the total value. That's why they call it capital appreciation. And then income is the cash that it spins off. So gold has no income stream. So if anyone says they make passive income out of gold, they are a liar, because gold doesn't have an income stream. Cryptos don't have an income stream. Okay, people talk about different ways to create income from crypto. Be very careful. But your crypto portfolio and the holdings doesn't have an income stream. My watch portfolio doesn't have an income stream. But I like gold for capital and defensive asset holdings. But really, the best income streams are real estate, S&P 500, FTSE 100, businesses, software, books, and information. Like, if anyone is watching and listening and thinking, but Rob, I want you to tell me how to make passive income, and they want to get to that part. But if anyone's listening or watching and is like, Rob, just I want to learn how to make passive income, what do I specifically do? Sell information. Because information has virtually no overhead and a very high margin. There's no stock holding. There's no premises. There's no big startup loans that you need to give away. There's no, there is IP in the sense of information, but you're not have some invention that you have to patent. And as quickly as you can record the information, you can sell the information. So absolutely not. Capital is not income. Equity is not income. Debt is not income. Only income is income. Now, the banks and the governments know exactly how to define each, because they fucking tax you on a lot of it. They tax you on income. They tax you on capital. They tax you on equity. And actually, in some instances, they've started to tax on debt, which to me is the biggest scam ever.
How does that work?
Well, it's technical. But you can't get interest relief anymore on your mortgage interest on property, which really, mortgage is debt. So it's essentially a tax on debt, essentially, or it's a non-relief on debt.
So how is passive income taxed?
Like income. Active income or passive income, it's taxed the same way. It's income tax. So if you receive income from a company, you will be taxed on that income when you draw it at your personal tax rate. But you'll also have corporation tax. So any sales you make into your company, sales isn't income. Revenue isn't sales or income. I'm happy to explain the differences if you want to go into those. So sales is the transactions you made. Revenue is the total income you generated. And I'll explain the difference in a minute. Gross profit is your profit after the cost of the sale. And net profit is what is left after everything, after all your overheads. Now, I like to explain these in non conceited accountancy spiel so that normal people can understand it. But sales, so we do 20 to 25 million a year in sales, but you could do sales but have 50% in cash and 50% on deferred income or payment plans. We have more than that. Sometimes our sales 88% cash in bank, 92% cash in bank, 65% cash in bank. But sales are the promised transactions that you do. Revenue is the actual money that comes in. Because you could do a sale this year, but you don't get the revenue till next year if the payment plan goes beyond the year, so that goes into a new tax year. Or you could do 25 million in sales, but you could have 1 million in bad debt or 3 million in bad debt, so you don't end up getting it. Now, revenue is all the cash that comes in, but revenue isn't sales that have come in, because in revenue you have bank interest, you have assets that company might own that creates passive income. So we make 20 to 25 million in sales this year, but I have all the book income coming in, I have all the bank interest coming in. So revenue is everything that came in. Sometimes sales is more than revenue, sometimes revenue is more than sales. So you are taxed on sales. Now in the UK, you're taxed VAT on all the sales because you have to charge it, but the buyer pays it. And then you're taxed corporation tax on all the revenue generated. So you could argue that corporation tax is an income tax. It probably wouldn't be defined as it technically, but I argue that it is, because I am bringing in, let's say, 15 million into the business in cash terms, and I've got to pay 20% in corporation tax for that. So I see that as an income tax, even though it won't be defined, because they call the taxes fancy names so that they can bullshit and baffle your brains. National insurance, it's a tax. ULEZ, it's a tax. VAT, it's a tax. You know the value bit in value-added tax? Where's the fucking value? It's just spin. It's just, you know, salesmanship. So then after your corporation tax, if you want to be able to spend the money yourself, you have to have income tax. And income tax can be up to 60% on a certain bracket of tax. There's this weird cliff edge, they call it, whereby you at a certain level, just over the 100, you pay more tax than if you earned 150 or 200. It's very penal. So income is taxed. Capital gains are taxed. So if you have the value of something go up and you sell it, you pay capital gains tax, but you've already paid the income tax on the income.
So wait, so let me get that right. So if you gifted me your watch and I sold that personally, would I then have to declare that money, or is that different because it's
well,
personal?
There's no capital gains tax on watches currently, and you don't have to pay tax on gifts.
Right.
But obviously, warning, if you ever want to do anything this grey, speak to at least three good accountants and get it signed off by a good accountant and have tax investigation insurance. So a gift is not income, it's a gift. And watches don't have capital gains because they're not deemed as an asset. And that's the way it should be, because most watches are not an asset.
Mm.
You go and buy a Breitling out of the shop, you go and buy an Omega out of the window, they just drop like that. I know how to make money on watches because I buy very select, specific watches. Now, if you are a watch dealer and you have a watch business, then you are taxed on corporation tax. You have to add VAT in most sales environments, not always. And then you pay income tax as well. So if you're lucky enough to be given a watch and you sell it, then you're not tax liable. But there was a bit of a sort of outcry, an outroar, because recently the government changed the rules on people selling on Vinted and eBay and on all these second-hand sites, and essentially now have more powers for you to declare your income. But if you sell anything second-hand, you should not be liable for tax because that is not deemed a business. If you bought that already and paid sales tax on, so that top, let's say that top was £500. If you paid corporation tax in your company and then income tax to draw it, and then you bought that and you paid sales tax on top of that, and then it goes down and then you sell it, why should you pay tax on what you sell it? But, you know, I would not be surprised if the government somewhere along the line find a way to tax you on secondhand goods, which is an outrage.
So I know this is about passive income. One more question on the watch thing, just because I'm interested. So technically, could a company gift a person a watch? Asking for a friend.
I think you have to be very careful.
Okay.
you can buy gifts in a company. You know, so I could, let's say you're a good client of mine, I could get you £500 worth of Amazon vouchers. Or I could, you know, if someone's been at a company 20 years, the company might buy them a Rolex. So this can be done, but you have to think, if I was investigated or inquired by IRS or HMRC, can I defend the legitimacy of this? And if you're gifting yourself watches and then going and flogging them and then pocketing the income, that's probably fraud. If you are receiving a gift from someone else for 10 years good service, that's legitimate or could be legitimate. But it would also need to be deemed reasonable. So we have an LLP and we have cars in it. That LLP turns over millions of pounds, and we've had sign off from our accountant, and also we have tax investigation insurance. So if we have an LLP that does 10 million a year and we run four supercars through it, and those supercars have a combined value of 400 or 500 grand, and it's a marketing company and it's a lifestyle company, well, that's sort of quite reasonable. If I have a company that makes 12 grand a year and I buy a Pagani and a Koenigsegg and a McLaren, that's unreasonable. In some countries, in their jurisdictions, you'll find that if you spend 20% of your income, they won't even look or inquire. But if you're spending 85 or 90% of your income, that's just a big red flag. So to anyone trying to minimize their tax, one, speak to a good accountant, two, get it underwritten by tax investigation insurance, but three, just don't have any big outrageous red flags. So I'll give you some nice tips that really work. If you keep having dinner in your city on your own or with your family, that looks like a personal expense. It's a big red flag. But if the dinners you have are in other cities and they're with clients or potential business partners, that's a business meeting. So what I decided to do, because I want to keep my tax down and taxes have gone up a lot and they're very penal, is I don't eat out anymore unless it's a business meeting. And then if I go to London, I go to London a lot. We just had our 3-day event there. Obviously, to me, 3 days in London is kind of like a mini trip. And if I'm speaking 2 or 3 slots in the day on the event, I can also whiz down and, you know, maybe go to London and things like that. And because I'm there on business, you know, the business element of that is a business expense, which is the hotel, the accommodation, everything else. The only thing that isn't a business expense is anything I might do personally. So on holiday, I don't do holidays, as you know. I do business trips. You know, I went out to Romania to interview Andrew Tate. I went out to Dubai to interview Andrew Tate. I've got Miami lined up with Patrick Bet David. I've got a tour in Dubai coming up. And instead of me doing holidays and paying, adding VAT and paying corp tax and paying income tax and then spending my holiday with what's left, I can have a business trip, and then that obviously reduces the profit and therefore you pay less tax. Just to be clear, just don't run anything that's obviously personal through your company. But there are ways to change your lifestyle, because whilst the governments, IRS, HMRC, they have closed a lot of fair and friendly tax breaks, which they created because they wanted to incentivize us to start a business, they can't shut them all. And you have to have, you have to go to business meetings. You have to eat while you're traveling to business meetings. You have to sometimes go abroad to business meetings. Sometimes you want to give your staff something kind and generous as a big bonus. All these things, you know, they're not that unreasonable. They know that these things are done. You know, and what happens is they make some slightly gamifiable rules, and then entrepreneurs gamify them, and then they retrospectively close them or tighten them up. So for example, all the London stockbrokers would go and buy £15,000 bottles of champagne. And, you know, that's probably a big red flag now to go and buy a £15,000 bottle of champagne. As you know, we did Prosecco at our Prosecco breakfast, not a champagne breakfast. So just be careful not to have big red flags, but you can be smart.
I appreciate that.
All right, I've got a quote for you. This one's from Gary Vee. This is a direct quote. It's a bad mindset, and the reason... This is about passive income, sorry. It's a bad mindset, and the reason so many scum buckets are making so much money is because you're buying stupid fucking courses over and over thinking there's some magic formula to passive income.
Okay, so Gary Vee, in some ways, is a bit of a twat. And here's why. Because I have seen him on stage at big events, being paid hundreds of thousands of pounds as a keynote speaker, absolutely bitch and attack the other speakers who are speaking on the stage who do a pitch. And to me, that's quite frankly wrong, because it's the organizer that put on the event. Oh, and he just happened to get his £250,000 keynote to rant and swear and piss everyone else off for an hour. And that person who's speaking to sell is doing it for free and trying to win some business. So for Gary Vee to say people selling bullshit courses is a scam is bullshit. And he's selling information. He's got sponsors that are paying him millions of pounds. He has promoters that are paying him 250 grand up front. So if you think about it, Gary Vee is selling a course for 250 grand. It just happens that the promoter pays for it, not the end user. So go fuck yourself. Honestly, I think it's bullshit, and I think he needs to fucking wind his mouth in, because it's bullshit. If I was running an event and I paid him £250,000 to speak at my event and he ran his mouth off like that, I'd kick him the fuck off and I'd get a refund. However, I also think Gary Vee's done a lot of really good content, and I think Gary Vee is very smart as an entrepreneur, and there are a load of shysters selling bullshit get-rich-quick schemes. So he's partly right. Now, this is solved really easily, which is, if it's too good to be true, it's too good to be true. If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's probably a fucking duck. So if there's some spotty teenager who hasn't even got pubes yet, who's selling you how to make millions in passive income on Forex, fucking wise up and be careful. And there are people who are only making money out of selling courses. But there are also people who are millionaires and billionaires who don't sell courses. But there are people like me who are, I became a millionaire doing the thing. I became a multimillionaire doing the thing. And I became an even bigger fucking millionaire teaching people how to do the thing. But the difference with me is I'd done the thing for years before I sold the thing. So it's actually really easy. Just do your diligence. Figure out if the person's doing the thing. If the person's doing the thing, buy the course on the thing. If the person isn't doing the thing, don't buy the course on the thing. But there are loads of great courses out there. A bigger scam than someone selling you Forex or crypto, because you can actually make money in crypto. A bigger scam than that is to go to university for 7 fucking years and get 6 figures in debt and learn economics and business from someone who earns 50 grand a year. That's a bigger fucking scam.
Socially.
Imagine if I sold you this dream. Learn from me on how to become a millionaire, even though I'm only making 50 grand a year, and get yourself 100 grand in debt in the process. Bullshit.
Make my parents proud, Rob.
Yes. So I'm glad you mentioned Gary Vee, because look, I've learned a lot from the guy about social media. But he needs to wind his neck in, and someone needs to say it. And people are probably scared to say it because he is smart and he is wealthy. But don't come anywhere near me on my event that I've spent £1 million to set up and I'm paying you 250. Yeah, everyone has to start somewhere. It's easy for people to say, oh, all courses are bullshit, don't buy bullshit courses, when they make their money through keynote fees and sponsorships. Because I make money in selling information, but I don't ever have to be a puppet to a sponsor. So there's people out there criticizing people who sell information when they are a puppet selling bullshit products and services. I have never read a script or sold a sponsorship product that I didn't believe in or pitched in my way. And there are plenty of people out there that don't sell courses, but are scamming you, getting paid by sponsors. Look at all, I refuse to have FTX as a sponsor. And how many people are FTX, you know, being given £1 million and then fucked all their subscribers over? You know, I have AG, Athletic Greens, as a sponsor. I've been drinking that for 16 fucking years. That's credible. I'm trying to get Dash as a sponsor, as you know. You know how much of that shit I drink, if we've got any here. And I had Blinkist as a sponsor, and they have my books, and I listen to Blinkist. So there's another side to this. Just basically, do a bit of diligence, find out if the person is doing the thing and not selling their ass, and then do it.
Well, yeah, because this is the way that I see it, because people say, oh, those that can't do teach, blah, blah, blah.
No, that's bullshit.
I agree.
Yeah.
Go on.
There are those that do that can't teach. There are those that teach and can't do. But there are those that do and can teach. Like, most big influencers that we know, like me, like all the dragons and all the people on Shark Tank. So it's just a nonsense saying.
Yeah.
Because there are, I mean, the worst for those that do and those that can't teach, the worst is college professors. They're the worst. Like, what big business does a university lecturer teaching the theory of economics have? I don't know. Because, like, you can't be a politician and an entrepreneur because politics takes up all your time and there's a conflict of interest. You can't run a big business and be a full-time lecturer. You can be an entrepreneur or a lecturer. So the trick is to merge both. So I'm an entrepreneur and a lecturer. I make money teaching, but I also did it. But there are the lecturers. They're the ones that can't do, so they teach. But yeah, there are all types.
On the topic of passive income, it makes sense why so many people go down the selling education route. Because if you've done the thing, made the money doing the thing, systemized the thing so you've got your time back, as an entrepreneur, why would you turn down tens of millions or millions a year teaching other people to do the thing?
Yeah, well, people always say, well, no. People always used to say to me in the early days of setting up my training business, well, Rob, if you're so fucking rich in property, why do you teach it? And at first I used to say things like, well, because I love teaching and I love making a difference. And that is true. But actually the real reason was, if I'm making so much fucking money in buying property, why do I teach it? Because I can make even more fucking money teaching it. Why would you not make money teaching it when you know how to do it? Because you just literally can double your income overnight. Also, I don't like managing tenants, boilers, insurance companies, safety checks, legal, insurance, inventories, which is stuff you have to do in real estate. I do love content speaking. Now, a lot of the people that don't teach, it's because they don't want to or they don't like to. So there's a lot of people doing, and the reason they don't teach is because they're an introvert. Or they don't teach because they don't want HMRC to find out how much tax they've evaded or avoided. You know, or they run a tobacco business or a betting business and they have to stay private. It doesn't mean that teaching is a scam. It means they want to hide. So you could see it as more credible that I teach and do, because I don't want to hide because I have nothing to hide. You know, I want to get these big gambling heads on my show to discuss if gambling is ethical or not and also learn about business. They all decline. Why? Because they want to stay private. Why? Because they're making billions out of fucking you over by getting you addicted to gambling. So they're never going to teach shit, but they know how to make billions.
So I've got a bit of a theory. I want your opinion on it. So do you know the lady who owns, is it Bet365?
Is this Denise Coates?
The one that keeps paying like hundreds and millions in tax. Like, she's the highest taxpayer. Yeah. Do you think she, because most people earning that sort of money, they're very secretive and very clever with their tax. Do you think she's publicly paying that much and sort of paying her way so there's not as much legislation on gambling?
Okay, so I would love to interview Denise Coates. I think it's really inspiring that a female, I'm going to say entrepreneur, can build to be one of the highest net worths in the whole country, billionaires. Now, she kind of inherited that business from her father, as I understand it. And people say, oh, well, that doesn't count then. She's not credible because, you know, she's not self-made. Often it's harder to take your father's or grandfather's business and carry it on. You know, generally the first generation builds it, the second generation sort of carries it along, and the third generation ruins it. So the fact that she's taken it and grown it, I actually see as really credible. And look, if you can become a billionaire in anything, you have shit that makes you smart that I want to know and I want to learn from. So I'd love to interview Denise. However, I fundamentally have an ethical moral problem with gambling firms. If this needs nuance, so I'm going to need to come back to your question in a minute. It is the regulatory body's responsibility to govern gambling, tobacco, health, everything. So I could argue, well, it's not Bet365 or Denise Cope or anyone else's responsibility to make gambling safe. It's the governing bodies. And I think the governing bodies need to toughen up, and they need to intervene more in certain areas. In things like lockdown, you may need to beat those out. They need to get the fuck back and intervene less. So our current governments are interviewing too much in the wrong areas and not enough in the right areas. For me, gambling needs to be way more regulated and way more warned, because gambling is a gateway drug to lose everything. I have a moral issue with gambling in general. I mean, it's dumb. You know, I became a millionaire age just before 31 by investing, not gambling. And some people are even thinking that they're investing, but they're gambling. So imagine what they're like when they're gambling. And you, the house always wins. You never win when you gamble. Mm. Even the professional gamblers that say they win, they don't. And I've known professional gamblers. So why put your money into something you are guaranteed to lose and is an addiction? And these big companies and corporations know exactly how to pick the scabs and get you addicted. Like the lure of a free bet. What a fucking scam that is. What a scam. And Paul Merson, who I interviewed as a gambling addict, he said he was given a £10,000 free bet. But that is the hook that draws you in. So that, it wildly fucks me off. I openly and publicly call anyone who owns a big gambling firm to come on my show. I will give them fair chance to speak. You know I always do. I never shoot my guests down. I'm not fucking Piers Morgan. You know, all about, you know, they can all talk. I let Andrew Tate just talk with his arms like this for 5 hours. I will give, I know you didn't expect this to be a call to arms to get a big gambling owner, because there's going to be shit I don't know. And by the way, because they might say, well, do you know what, Rob? People are going to gamble anyway, so you might as well control it. It's a bit like the argument of legalizing drugs. And I'm prepared to learn. And if gambling is illegal, does that solve the problem? Probably not. But gambling fucking kills people. And it breaks up relationships. And it's terrible for your wealth. And I'd love to have the chance to debate with a billionaire who owns a gambling firm. So let's put that out there. Let me know in the comments if you agree. Reach out to people, spam the fuck out of Denise Cokes and get her on the show. And by the way, I'll draw out good lessons from her as well. Do I believe what she is publicly showing she is paying in tax is 20% corp and 45% income and 12% national insurance? Is it fuck? No way. And would I want to pay all that if I was a billionaire? No. And would I have fucking good accountants and lawyers, better than the governments have, to minimise my tax? Yeah. And you know I said earlier, the government should do more to intervene and regulate. But the thing with the billionaires is they have so much power, they can just go, well, we'll give you a donation of £25 million for your campaign, as long as this legislation here is passed through or not passed through. And if I was a billionaire and I had power to control legislation to my advantage, would I be tempted? Of course I fucking would, as would everyone watching here. Now, I know what I do is ethical and moral, and it doesn't fucking cause addictions and bankruptcies and ruin families and lives. Rant over. Is Denise Coates paying everything? No. Is she breaking the law? I don't know. She's probably not. She's probably making the law. Because to get out of debt and be a zero heir to nearly there, you've got to learn the rules. To be a millionaire, you can break some rules, i.e. you can reduce your tax when employees can't. But when you're a billionaire, you make the fucking rules. And I interviewed Nigel Farage and he said, you know, the massive big business, the big corporations, they control government and they make the rules. And would I, if I was in that same position? Yeah, I would. Now, Alan Sugar, he's really smart. He posts it used to be checks when he paid by check, but you know, he'd have a 200 million tax bill and print the check. But is that 20% corp and 45% income and 12% national insurance? Is it fuck? No. And do I begrudge them reducing their tax? No. Do I think that Denise Coates and Alan Sugar and Elon Musk can deploy capital better into society than the governments and central banks? Yes.
Well, here's the other thing is using debt to buy things. It's like a hack for the ultra wealthy.
Are you using share? Go on, will you explain?
Yeah, so from what I understand, we'll use Elon Musk, is he borrowed against his Tesla stock, I believe, to then buy Twitter, which means you don't pay tax on it because it's debt. Is that right?
Well, I think he also raised a lot of VC private investment for Twitter. I don't think it was all his. But yeah, you selling your own, creating debt to essentially pay yourself. For me, there's nothing wrong with that because you've created the debt. I do that with real estate. So I have 58 to 62% debt on, you know, a pushing nearly. How many figures is 100 million? Is it 8 or 9 figures?
Nine.
It's 9, isn't it? So my portfolio isn't quite 9 figures, but it's not a million miles off. And I have about 58 to 62% debt on that. If I had no debt, I'd probably have a 2 million or a 5 million portfolio. So am I going to A, sell off 10 million of that portfolio, pay back the 58 to 62% debt, and then pay the capital gains tax and the sales tax and the hit I take on selling it? Or am I just going to refinance from 60% debt to 70% debt and take the 10% debt? Now, I have to pay that debt back. So that's not a scam or a scheme. I have to pay that debt back. But would I rather have that than sell my asset and not earn on the asset ever again and pay all the taxes? Yeah. So as long as I don't overstretch my debt, if my property portfolio goes up 10%, and let's call that just for round numbers 10 million, if I want to access that 10 million, I either sell all the assets and I pay all the taxes and sales costs, and then I've got no property portfolio left to go up. Mm. Or I release it or most of it as debt, and if I'm smart, I reinvest some of it back into assets and I might choose to use some of it. But I've got to pay off the debt. So in some ways, all you really do when you leverage shares or debt is you're just paying yourself a bit earlier and you're delaying the sale. Now, in the end, they'll get it probably because there'll be inheritance tax when you die. But I'd much rather have a reasonable amount of debt when I die, so the income on my asset equity is lower and I got to enjoy the fruits of living in the meantime. So people should not 100% live off debt. But if you can have your assets go up and keep your assets and take debt rather than sell, and the income pays for the increase in debt, you've got a virtuous cycle where growth goes up, so you've got more equity. Inflation pays down your debt. Income pays off your debt. Then your debt's been paid down by inflation. Your asset's gone up. Then you increase the debt. The income is still paying for the debt. You have the debt cash in hand. You do with it what you want. And then over time, inflation keeps paying off your debt. So people often ask me, should I pay off my mortgage? Well, if your mortgage is a relatively fair interest rate, i.e. not 10% plus, long-term average is 5 to 6. So people think, because they got 2%, didn't they, 5 years ago, they think that's normal. It's not, it's just generational. But a long-term average debt is 6%. So if your debt is either side of 6%, that's fair. So if you pay off your debt, then inflation will pay off your money, but it can't pay off your debt. So what people don't know about inflation is that it reduces the value of your money. Most people know that, but it also reduces the value of your debt. So the more debt you have, the more inflation is paying it off. So if you draw cash or capital as debt that can be sustained by the asset and the income pays off the debt, and you have enough equity for a correction in price, not only have you got cash there as debt, you also have opportunity cost cash that you didn't pay off the loan with that you can go and invest in more assets. And inflation is paying your mortgage off for you. So I believe pre-COVID that interest rates were more than 10% in reality. I ask people who really know, is inflation really only what they say? And everyone says no. And actually, through lockdown, they were telling us that the inflation rate had gone over 10% in the UK. So if they say 10, I say 20. So if inflation, even if it's only 15, what that means is 15% of the value of your cash is going down every year. But so is 15% of all your mortgages and all your loans. So I had 60-ish percent mortgages and debt in 2020, full stop. And I reckon that the government have paid off half of the value of my mortgages, relatively speaking.
In 4 years.
Yeah, because I reckon, I would not be surprised if the total inflation rate since 2020 to now is somewhere near 50%. If you add in cost of everything to live, everything. Now, I haven't got hard data on this, but then the economists, they don't put everything in the basket of goods, and some things have gone up wildly. So debt leverages inflation.
That's interesting. I've got a few questions that people have been asking. So let's do quick fire, if that's okay. How long do you think it would take for passive income to replace the average person's expenses?
It depends on the model. If you launched a membership site selling what you know, so I know about money and business, I have rob.team, and that has past and present almost 10,000 members. And if I wanted to make 10 grand a month at £10 a month, that's 1,000 members I need. 365 days in a year, that's 3 members a day. I need 3 members every day to get to 1,000 in the year, and then I'm making 10 grand a month and I might only need 5.
Yeah.
So if I, can anyone sell 3 people a day in a £10 membership site? Damn straight they can.
I actually think it's a third of that. I think really most people's, maybe outside of London, your minimum expenses, like mortgage, food, lights on, probably a couple of grand, right?
Okay, well, let's call it 3 grand. I mean, to be honest, when I was teaching people how to launch businesses 10 years ago, everyone wanted 3 grand a month as their first target. Now everyone wants 5 to 10 grand a month as their first target. So yeah. That, if what I just said about inflation, you didn't believe about the value of my mortgages
yeah.
gone down almost by half, or the value of your money gone down almost by half. 8 to 10 years ago, everyone wanted $3,000 a month. Now everyone wants 5 to 10. There's the proof. But let's call it three. So if it's $3,000 a month, it will take you 1/3 of a year to get three members paying £10 a month for either your membership site or your software business. So in 1/3 of a year, you could replace all of your living expenses that it might have taken you 15 years of job-related income to have not replaced.
So let's put that into further context. So today is the 16th of April. So many people make a New Year's resolution, I'm going to launch the business. Had you have done that on New Year's, you would be 2 weeks away from making your goal. But they didn't.
Yes, exactly. That is a good point. We are almost 1/3 of the way through the year. And if someone just, not even 4 months ago, had said, I'm just going to get three members a day at £10 a month. Now, what I'm about to tell you, everyone needs to note down. The reason most people aren't making passive income, recurring income, or job replacement income right now is a fairly new problem in society. It used to be not enough information. Now it's too much information, which is why you should subscribe to me in this channel and fuck off everything else. Because too many gurus, too many influencers, too many TikTokers, too many business model ideas, because literally you can make money out of just about anything now. If you watch my previous videos, I did the 10 weirdest ways to make millions and the 5 most shocking ways to make millions. And I gave you the most obscure business models, cleaning up crime scenes, encouraging people to have affairs, selling dirty bathwater. These all made people multi-millions. Like, go watch the video or listen to the audio. So the new problem in society for starting and scaling a business and hitting 3, 5, 10 grand a month is overwhelm, not lack of information, because there's too much information. So here's what you need to do. Chunk it down and start simple. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. How do you run a marathon? One step at a time. So here's what you do. If you want to take my guidance and 18 years experience and 250 million in sales done and 19 books written and 1,000-odd podcast episodes done and 2 big YouTube channels and all of this, and I interviewed 21 billionaires, hundreds of millionaires I know. If you want to take all that advice and not have to make all the mistakes, this is what you do. You start with information, because you don't have to buy stock, you don't have premises, you don't have loans. You figure out what you know better than many or most, and everyone, no matter what your age, knows something, whether it's a passion or a profession. Then you launch a platform on it, which you're going to charge 10 a month minimum, but it could be 30 and 50 and 100. But start with the 10 a month, like rob.team is 8 a month. And then what you're going to do is you're going to do content that's linked to it. And at the end of the content, you're going to offer your membership site. So if anyone ever watches any of my content, you can't watch 2 or 3 videos in a row without me saying something like, if you'd like to make and multiply more money, join rob.team. Rob.team is my digital financial freedom platform to help you start and scale a business and build multiple streams of recurring income. It's really easy to join. All you have to do is type in rob.team. There's no risk. You're chuckling away here because you know the script.
I hear this in my dreams.
Exactly. You hear this in your dreams. It costs less than 20 pence a day to join. You can cancel anytime. There's no ongoing contract, so there's no risk. And there's hundreds of hours. In fact, I reckon now there's 1,000 hours of content on rob.team for less than 2 large coffees a month. You just type in rob.team. I've now got multiple mentors on real estate and membership sites and recurring income and social media and becoming a creator. In fact, if people join now, they can get my 12 module, 16 hour Money Mastermind University course completely for free. I was pissed off with the education in school. So I created my own school education system for university and college, and you can get that as a bonus for joining rob.team. Type in rob.team. Full stop. That, other than you interrupting me once, that is my verbatim script for rob.team that has generated me 10,000 members for free. Because it just goes at the middle or at the end of any piece of content I've done. In fact, anyone could pause this video right now, rewind, watch it, transcribe my script, overlay their business model, let's say their chess, martial arts, health, well-being, spirituality, meditation, you know, engineer, short form editor, podcaster, copy my script, put it, say it live or put it on the end of any piece of content, and you could get 1,000 or 3,000 members in a year doing nothing else because you're already doing the content anyway. And if you're not doing the content because you're overwhelmed, now you've got a good motivation to do the content. It is that easy. Now, 10,000 members at 10 a month is 100,000 a month. Whether I have one member or 10,000 members, I have to do the same amount of work. So is rob.team passive income for me? About 97%, because I still do occasional Sunday sessions and I still do content in it, but all the 1,000 hours that's in it, I've already done it. So once you get it to your critical mass of 3 grand a month, 5 grand a month, 10 grand a month, because what you do when you scale it is you get other tutors and mentors in to teach for you, and then it's completely passive. So that's how you do it. Like, you don't need to watch any more videos. That is how you do it. So go and do it and then come back to us for your next steps.
Do you already need to be rich to have passive income?
Money is only one type of asset that makes money. In fact, probably the worst asset to make money is money, because money will make you 5 to 6% a year consistent. Any more than that is high risk. So you'll lose as well as gain. But if you want low risk, sustainable, scalable, 5 to 6%. So actually, money's pretty shit at making money, because it makes 5 to 6%. But your hustle could make 50 to 60%. Your IP could make 500 or 600%. Your energy, enthusiasm, and passion could make you 5,000%. Your ability to speak and sell and pitch could make you 50,000%. So the resources of money are limited. The resourcefulness of humans are limitless. Now, people always say, oh, well, I haven't got any money. Good. Because then you're not going to rely on the fairly average or low resource of money. You should rely on your energy, enthusiasm, passion, hustle, grind, energy, positivity, getting up early, staying up late, ability to solve problems, desire to grow. There, I've just given you 11 human resources, which we all have.
I've just seen a Hormozy clip where he's basically spoken about what you've just said. It's like, if he added up the 100 odd grand he's invested in courses and personal, education and mentors, if he stuck that at the S&P 500 at 6% a year over the last 10 years, he would have made what? Couple of million. It was like, but instead he invested that money in himself, which has made him 100 million in those same 10 years.
Yeah, and the problem is making 100 million and he still wears Crocs. I mean that he needs to be shot for that. Anyone who wears Crocs, I'm sorry, but like,
he might be the only millionaire that wears Crocs.
Oh no, they're all copying him now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there you go. I'll give that to Alex. Yeah, but yeah, he's very well regarded in the industry and he's given a lot of value, and I agree with him. I've got a way higher ROI on myself than I have any passive investment. I am my best asset. I invest in myself wisely. I pay myself the best return. I can 10x, 100x or 1000x the investment in myself. I can 0.05x my money in the S&P 500.
All right, final thing. Blind rank these passive income strategies. So there's five, ranking one to five without knowing what's coming next. Property.
For scalability, one. For barrier to entry and difficulty to get in, four. So you want an overall?
Yeah.
Two. Dividend. As in one is best.
One is best. Yeah. Dividend stocks.
For long-term sustainability, good. For low risk, good. For speed, bad. So I will rank that four.
Membership sites.
One, for speed, good. For recurring, good. For leverage, good. For digital asset ownership, good. Because as soon as I change rob.team to a money-related URL, that's going to be worth a lot of money. I might get a 10 or 20x multiplier on a digital asset because it's software. I won't get a 10 to 20x multiplier on my real estate portfolio. By the way, you should be shocked. Your face should be being pulled all over the place because I made my millions in property and I ranked property under membership sites. Because with property, you can do it with no money, but it just takes a long time because you're buying expensive assets. They're hundreds of thousands or millions of pounds. But with a membership site, you can launch it after this video and you can get your first client after you've launched it after this video and you can copy what I did in the video. It's that fast.
Number four, I think this one is. A company somebody else is managing.
I think I've got three and five left. I think real estate was two.
Yes.
Yeah. Membership was one. Dividend stocks was four. Right. So a company someone else is managing. Mm. It depends on the size.
Let's go Progressive Property. 20 to 25 mil a year. A Christmas number one.
Five. That worked out nicely. Now, by the way, if I could write a Christmas number one, it might be two because it's brilliant leverage, but I'm really glad that came out as five. Yeah, Christmas number one has to be five. That, do you know what? I probably wouldn't reorder that.
Really?
If it was not blind. Like if you said and gave me the five, I'd have the same order.
So if you was to start again today and you could only pick one asset, you would pick a membership site over property?
No, I'd pick a membership site to start because it's quickest and most lean, and then all the profits from it I'd lob into real estate.
That's why you're really rich. All right, cheers, Rob.
Thank you very much.